Yeah. There is a positive balance in the bonus fund, but there was a greater negative balance than was released from last month. And so the fund seems to be balancing out at your direction, so thank you for that. Any questions on funding? There will be different numbers by the October 13th. Well, here's what's missing in this is that we didn't have the new numbers for the first month of fiscal year 16 yet, and loan repayments for 2 months. So I'm expecting that I will have those numbers probably in time to print it for the board package. I'm expecting it probably at the end of September. So if you'd like, I can email you with those numbers and you can see them ahead of time. When I get new numbers, I will do that. A quick review of loan repayments, just in line with this discussion of what the fund looks like. I give a ledger of all loan repayments annually. I did a quick addition of what those loan repayments are, and there are $32,421,000 payments coming this year on loans that you have put forward. Of those, there's $3,535,006 in interest on those loans for a total of $35,957,000. And that's loan repayments, that's not new money. So that's what that looks like. And of course, that's an estimate from the ledger that shows all of the annual funding that will be coming in for loan repayments. It's kind of interesting. In your red folder, as always, or actually sitting on top of the red folder, was your rainbow sheet, which is now representing 2011 through 2015 revenue and allocations that the board has done. That's just a tool for your use. Also, there are some graphs that will probably be utilized as we come into oil prices and the board discussion at the end of the meeting. You can kind of see what. As we proceed moving forward, you can see what oil prices and its impact on the quarry. You're probably all mostly aware of that, but discussion will probably be the applications today. The first project is Salina City, and thank you, Mr. Zanotti, for pointing out that we're not funding $6 billion. That's quite a large system. Take off that last three, we set a 3 zeros, and that should be enough. There is for water system improvements. There, Sunline City has no cash in this application. There are $6,436,000 from CID, of which there's a $1,288,000 per year 2.5% loan, and a $5,148,000 grant. On the study that they did earlier in the year, it was indicated that they would do this in 3 phases. This is actually, I believe, all phases. So this is the whole water system. The DEQ says that they're not currently out of compliance, but there is a standard for having 2 water sources, but right now Salina City only has 1 water source. So this will assist them in getting a 2nd water source. It's a water tank and some lines. Salina has 1 spring right now, 2nd one is needed to be in compliance. Of this request, $2,330,000 is for land easements. Apparently that's the water rights required by the state engineer before they'll get plan approval for this. The review from DEQ is on 3-1-5. If the board authorizes all loan for this one, at it will bring the Magi to 1.6 acres. Green River City is application number 2 for water and sewer and drainage facilities improvement. It does include water for a $207,000 of the project, $207,900. Drainage for $63,500. Sewer for $206,800. And street improvement for $184,000. Green River City received 100% grant for the sewer portion, the Magi would be 1.47%. The Magi, so it's high. And if they received all grant for water, it still puts their Magi at 3.40% for their water, for their cost. They had a really good public hearing. I hope you noticed that. They're asking for a $331,585 grant. Moab City, you should have received an email. They have requested that this application be withdrawn. Their $918,000 grant to CID was probably not going to be any different than getting it all from water quality, so they're going to put the whole project together and submit their application there currently in the need of water quality for the Moab wastewater treatment plant. It has not been funded by either source. When they go through it, I always like to let the applicant know there is no penalty for doing so. If they choose or might need to come back to the board, that there is no harm with that. Milford City is number 4, so if you have others, we won't be discussing them all. Milford City is for a water master plan. They have $21,250 cash. They're asking the CID for $21,250 in grant funding. There's an RPP review on 3-4-6, which recommends it because the plan that we have in place is a 20-year-old plan. There's also the RPG review. Now, this one has a wee bit of an anomaly, and perhaps this should be a question the board could ask the applicant. What is the $2,500 indicated on the application billed as funding assistance? Project number 5, Santee County Fire Improvement District. This is for 7 wildland urban interface vehicles. Santee County Fire is putting in $600,000 in applicant cash. The locations of the vehicles are indicated on your yellow sheet. The district covers about 1,590 miles. Servicing about 28,000 in population, 10,367 houses, and a few recreational. They assess the need and prioritize the areas where these vehicles will go. On page 3-5-10, there are risk factors for the areas that the applicant has indicated. They're asking for a matching grant for their cash of $600,000. Ivan City is number 6 for an impact fee study. Impact fee studies are fairly intensive. If you go into in-depth of, you know, what are the prices of things currently, what are the needs of the city, what fees should be assessed in order to afford as you go forward for a plan. They do have $125,000 indicated on the application. Statute and cash is always a good question. Is that in place? And they're asking for $125,000 in grant funding. In the public hearing on this one, if the applicant could speak to it, I was really hoping no discussion of this particular application or this project. They probably did. I will assume that they did, but there is an indication of this discussion. On the project number 7, Rockville Springdale Fire Protection District. This is for a feasibility study and a master plan. Rockville Springdale have been trying to accommodate a growing tourism factor. They are the servicers of all fire protection in the area. The applicant's passion, this one is interesting. There is $9,400 in cash from the district. Rockville City is putting in $600. And Springville is putting in $10,000 for their match to a request to CID of $20,000 in grant. This is the fire district, and until 2013, there were no cash flow issues. They will send out an RFP as far as their procurement for getting this study done. A feasibility study was offered by Hurricane that there was a conflict of interest. There are probably, this probably is a good one, but the board will need to determine that. They're trying to discover how to effectively manage risk and find an acceptable and sustainable cost to each one. Number eight is Town of Apple Valley. This, in 2004, this board funded a gateway project study. This is the project of itself, in and of itself. They have 20,000 cash. There's a $1,977,000 CID request, of which there's a $1,318,030 at 1.5% loan request and a $659,000 grant. That's 67% request for loan and 33% request for grant in this funding package. It's to include the bridge that goes into town, which is now single wide. Curb and gutter, sidewalk, street, and intersection improvements. They had a great public hearing. On this application, there's also a 15% contingency and $20,000 listed for legal fees. Okay. What are the status of rights of way? Is probably a question of what you're going to ask. Town of Clarkston, number nine, is a water master plan, $10,000 grant request with a $10,000 cash match from the Town of Clarkston. This is a public hearing. The last update of the water master plan was in 2001, so it's this one also has, in the scope of work, funding breakdown of $2,300 in funding assistance costs. This is for their water system, and this is for Clinton, Clarkson, and Newton. So this will study their water rights, source and storage, treatment, and distribution. The pending project that we put on the pending list is under pending. Town of Joseph, the utility master plan, which utilities include water, roads, storm, secondary water. These plans should be updated probably like 5 to 10 years. I don't know particularly when this one was updated, but I know it's doing it. What is the status of the Division of Drinking Water Cash, which is their cash match? They're asking for $40,000 from this board, and they've requested $40,000 from the Division of Drinking Water. I believe that's why they wanted it on the pending list. They probably know what that looks like. Anyway, now, and then we're going to board discussion. Just a correction on the minutes before somebody jumps in and fixes me. Chris did notice that on the last motion, Steve Farrell did it twice. He was really improved that, and we didn't give any credit to Commissioner Winterson. So drop a Farrell and add a Winterson. And that has been done in the file thus far. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Powell. Appreciate that briefing. Hopefully we're all up to speed and ready to go. Ready or not, here we go. Welcome, everyone. We're happy to have you all with us. Let's start off with some introductions. And Mr. Galecki, we'll start with you and work on the rest.
Sure. I'm Greg Galecki. I represent the Water Quality Board.
Good morning, my name is Mike McKee. I'm the county commissioner out in Miami County, representing the largest municipality in the state. Good morning.
Steve Farrell, Washington County Council, I represent the Board of Water Resources.
Tim Madden, the Kane County Commission, representing the Five County Association of Governments.
Good morning, Matthew Ferrari from St. George, representing the Utah Commission.
Good morning, I'm Tamara Cullard, Interim Director for Housing, Community, and Development. My address for my term is Candace Powers,
I'm currently staff to the board.
I'm repeating to you. Good morning, my name is T.G. I'm with the Housing Community Development Division.
Richard Ellis, State Treasurer.
Claudia Jarrett, Shelby County Commissioner, representing the 6th County AOG.
Bruce Adams, Federal County Commissioner, representing Southeastern Utah AOG.
Chase Potter, Carver County Commissioner, representing Carver County.
Ron Morrison, State County Commissioner, representing the UM Basin and Massachusetts.
Susan Eisenman, Producer General, Fox Hill, providing legal representation for the board today. So not Tom Roberts, but what that's on. I'm Gail Gardner, staff for the board.
Christian.
I'm Christian, staff for the board.
Chad West, staff for the board.
Catherine Schmidt, Housing Community Development.
On the move, Commissioner for the Department.
Nathan Hall with the Division of Drinking Water.
Shannon Altruth with the Rural Planning Group.
Thank you. We also have our regional planners sitting in the back. We welcome them. And I noticed that Senator Ralph Oakland snuck in at some point. I don't know if he's still back there. Anyway, welcome, Senator. We're happy to have you here. Well, Chandler would like you to make a few additional announcements. Please remember to sign in if you have not. If you don't sign in, you weren't here no matter what you say. And for the board members, please remember to speak into the microphone. Over the last couple of meetings, we've had to go back to recordings, and sometimes they're not very clear, so it helps if you stick that microphone in front of you, sir. Candace pointed out there was one minor correction to the minutes. If there are other corrections, you would entertain those, and if not, we would accept a motion to approve.
I move approval of the minutes for that correction.
We have a motion by Commissioner Jarrett. Is there a second? Mr. Donati has a second. All in favor with aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. I think that's unanimous. Are there any questions on the financial statements from the board? Just want to point out that we still have a slight deficit in the mineral lease balance and a slight excess in the bonus funds, so that means we can put slightly more into interest-bearing loans and slightly less in grants, although it's pretty darn close, so we're doing a good job so far this trimester. Chairman's prerogative, at our last meeting, and again on this meeting, I noticed that there were various interest rates. Just for everyone's information, the standard rate that the board has approved is 2.5%. The board does have at their disposal the ability to take an interest rate below that. So while that is acceptable, it can be confusing for our applicants. And so we try to stick to that standard 2.5%. So that's just a reminder for everyone. Having said that, we'd like to invite Salina City to come up and please make sure you introduce yourself to the record and then the description of your project.
Good morning, hello, good morning. I'm Mayor Dustin Deaton from Salina City. This is Jeff Albrecht, my engineer.
I work for Savage Surveying in Richfield.
Tell you a little bit about Salina, if you don't, hope you all are aware of where it's located, central part of the state within Sevier County. Salina has, it's been an exciting time for us in these last 2 years. We've been experiencing a lot of growth. With that growth, a lot of commercial growth, Loves brought in a truck stop at $8 million. Truck West is an unfinished truck stop, about $4 million. Peterbilt of Utah, unknown on the cost of that one. Warner Truck Center built a shop at $4 million. Kenworth built a shop at $5 million. UDOT built a nice, very nice new facility in our industrial park. We've had 12 small businesses, including restaurants, hotels, medical clinic, and small stores. Overall, the last 2 years, we've had $25 million worth of New Grove in town. We have two more businesses currently seeking locations inside of our industrial area. We approved a new subdivision with 50 new building lots for 50 new homes. Swiner has is home to two trucking companies which own 200 coal trucks. They haul 940 loads a day through our town. They employ about 400 employees. We're also home for a coal mine, Suffcore coal mine, located 25 miles east of Swiner Canyon. They employ 392 people. Suffco is the largest producer of coal in the state of Utah. They're responsible from their product to supply 50% of the power in the state of Utah. They pay about $6.5 million a year in royalties to the federal government. After administration costs, I think about half of that goes to this board. Somewhere in there, I don't have the exact figure, but Swiner is greatly impacted by the coal industry. From employees that live there, to the coal trucks that drive through every town, to our town every day, and also because of a stockpile of coal within our state limits that is maintained at an average of 225,000 tons year round. Currently, we are in really bad need of a water project. We are hitting the peak of our water system, and with the new commercial growth we have, we have felt that peak three times this year. We ran out of water three times on the 18th to the 20th of June, on the 27th of June, and then again on the 5th of August, we actually had an accident where a water line just cracked and broke underground, and our businesses suffered for 3 days until we could replenish our tanks and refill them. The ratio, I'm aware of, last year you guys had a meeting where you brought up that the ratio of money put in versus the ratio of who's borrowing money. I don't think Sevier County has been borrowing as much as other counties, so I hope you will take into strong consideration of that. I think we were around 70 cents. We borrow about 70 cents for every dollar we put in Sevier County.
As far as the need for the water project, a water master plan was completed in 2014. As you're aware, the Division of Drinking Water analyzed it as well. We're showing no need for a storage or a source, which Swiner's interesting town. They actually have two pressure zones, and they do have significantly more storage than any other town I've ever done a study for. But the bad part about that is all the storage is in the wrong location. All the growth is on the upper pressure zone near Interstate 70. There's only 500,000 gallons worth of storage that feeds that. When we did the study, we thought we were within 60,000 gallons of being at the limit, and they proved this summer that we're exceeding that, or they ran out of water two different times, just on demand, no breaks. So our study, or the study that was completed, kind of analyzed the upper zone independent of the lower zone. And if you look at just the upper zone, where if you look at just the growth last year in commercial, the 27% growth in commercial connections in the upper zone, which is huge. We didn't project that growth over 20 years, or we'd be asking for the $6 billion, but we're just going with the $6 million. We anticipated building a larger tank than the 20-year projection needs, mainly because we can estimate projections all we want, but we're guessing, and it is on private land where the tank would be located. There's not a lot of space available there. This is kind of a one-time shot to get a bigger tank in that area that's growing. And they mentioned the three phases. It was initially the city wanted to do it in a three-phase project where we just wanted to do the storage first. But when you start looking at their need for a source, they only have one supply. It makes sense to give them a backup supply. If they lose that source of water, they have nothing. So we dove in to make phase two part of phase one, which is the well. And unfortunately, the water right situation drove phase three into phase one also, because you can't drill a well without water rights. So we're coming to you with three phases in one. So.
Thank you, gentlemen. We appreciate the presentation. We'll now turn our attention to the board for questions. If there's not, we'll start with you. Good morning, Mayor. How are you doing again?
Good.
We visited you about community last month on the UDOT Commission, and we were impressed with the progress you've made and, of course, attraction of the new businesses that you signed up. Thank you for doing that. Wonderful community. My question is, on your May 27th council meeting that you had, someone has suggested from your council member, maybe you need to identify a source of water first and maybe put a purchase agreement by October. Have you done that yet?
Yes, we are currently in negotiations with a group of people who have the water rights. And actually, we got a phone call last night. It happens to be, without getting into the details of it, happens to be three brothers. And it's a family-owned deal. And two of the brothers are on board. I got a phone call last night. They were willing to sign the paperwork, but we didn't want to get into that detail. We didn't have a signed paper back from them with their intent. We have an intent to them with the money that we had budgeted to spend to buy that water right. And it's all in agreement, but it's not written and signed yet.
Yes. Is sufficient enough to accommodate for the project we have in
the Yes. It's more than sufficient.
Yes. Yeah. It's when you get into water rights, it's kind of crazy, but we have to purchase more than we need to get what we need. So, but yeah, we've agreed upon and have a purchase agreement in place. They have it in their hand. They just haven't signed it yet. So,
thank you.
Are these surface water rights or groundwater rights?
They're surface.
So you're going to have to get them in bridge over?
Yeah, and we've accounted for the reduction.
The groundwater is real. We actually financed a few wells that came up dry, so I guess my concern would be they won't do the ground. I'm not familiar with the hydrology of the basin in that area, so good chance you have water there to get to.
Good chance. Anytime.
I'm pretty sure I look on your face.
I don't know if you've ever drilled a well, but.
No.
It's kind of a scary deal, but we, in the initial process of the study, we had a hydrogeologist look at a potential location, which is about 6,800 feet from our tie-in points. We budgeted in this cost about 6,800 feet of pipe, and we will do a test well prior to drilling the well, but the well location is close to the Sevier River drainage, which all along the drainage has produced fairly good wells. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of data right around Salina. There's a lot of wells in Richfield and then north of there, but the hydrogeologist that looked at it was confident that near the river we could pull the water we needed.
Mr. Mark, maybe I misunderstood one of the things you said in regards to the surface water. You're asking for funding for water rights in this address. I hear you said you had to let that cover the money that you already had in the county.
Not with the money that we have, but the money we have budgeted. We wanted to get a purchase agreement in place so that we could show you, because that's a huge cost if you look in there. One of the largest costs in the project is that water right. And we kind of wanted to have something in place to show that it's a possibility.
Thanks for clarifying that. Also, what other sources have you looked at for funding?
mentioned about quality, the other mechanisms that are in place for the state of Utah as far as the water projects go. I don't see any of that in the notes or the information that you have.
We were coming to you first because we felt like Lyon is a heavily impacted city based off the mineral extraction. We do intend to apply with the Division of Drinking Water.
If we had to, that is a possibility for us. But if you look at the five businesses that large businesses that hit there, Peterbilt, Kenworth, Love's, all of them are directly affiliated with the trucking companies, which are tied to the coal. And we felt like, and the council felt like they could possibly get a better funding package from you, and that's why we came here first.
You know, and in some of those projects, as you look past, there's been those components of not only applicant cash and service of the input, but also the applications from the various state organizations. But the majority of the large water projects like you're talking about have also been on a 50-50 split between grant and loan. And your minutes indicate that can stretch your project and stretch your budget. So I'm conscious of that, but in all fairness, based on the interest rates and that, you know, what's been going on, I'm wondering if you've gone far enough in looking at the costs associated with your project, where your other funding might come from.
Yes, we have, and we're shooting for an 80-20, as you're aware, but we also take into consideration of what we're going to have to pass on down to the water bill payer, the citizens of this line. And I also have to take into consideration that I have elderly people who are on a fixed income, living on Social Security, and I broke it down to where if you give me an 80-20, this is what their water bill will be, if it's a 70-30, a 60-40, and a 50-50. And how much I'd have to raise their water bill in order for us to pay back the loan.
It's a very painful process, even if you look in our local papers, we help people going through that right now. ABC, everyone who listens to the whole media, I've always been consistent with the audience, so I understand that you're talking to me, but nonetheless, it's one of those issues that we all have to face.
I have a question for Nathan. It has to do with your report and the connection fee. It looks like TMSA is dedicated to wanting to put your mail driver R1 and R7. But if the whole development is to support the South End of Salina, which is predominantly commercial. So do you ever take into consideration a different commercial rate in that, I mean, just help me understand that this year it's totally, as I don't understand what you're saying, is because of this huge development out of the Shelton County with all these large freight companies building big ones, building together. So I guess my question too, for one, you take into consideration, or secondly, does not that help them if they have a different rate structure for that, for the majority of this project that you're going to support that?
Nobody should speak into a mic, or will they pick it up? So, thank you, Commissioner Jarrett. We don't look at commercial versus residential when we do our average water bill, but the water system could include that if they looked at their water rates. And if you notice in the first paragraph of my report, I kind of summarized that they've got 150 commercial connections roughly, but in the application that they submitted, they used equivalent residential connections instead of actual connections. And since those commercial water users are using as much as the 800 residential units, that bumps up the total number of connections in our formula. So that kind of drives down the magi, the water bill, and the resulting magi. So it kind of artificially does that, but they can overcome that artificial driving down of the magi by, instead of raising the residential rates, raise the commercial rates up to where they're paying for their share of water. And so then, in this situation, this doesn't happen very often, but in this situation, you should be able to change your rate structure
so that your citizens aren't impacted very much, and the commercial growth that is occurring gets charged more in the future and kind of help pay back any loans you get. Does that answer your question?
It does. And that brings back the question that Mr. Potter asked relative to normal businesses.
And that's, I'll be honest, this is something we've taken into consideration since we read the report back, that we are looking at raising commercial higher than what residential payers pay.
And as a line of credit, they do have a pretty well-defined rate structure. They have three different classifications of commercial already, which pay significantly higher than residential right now. They have heavy, medium, and light. Upwards of twice what the residential are paying now, but they... And also to their credit, I think about 2 years ago, they had a flood in Salina Creek Canyon that filled their irrigation pond. They didn't come to anybody for money. Mayor Miller wasn't mayor at the time. They went and got a private loan, raised the rates on the community $4 to $5 two or three years ago, just to pay to redo that. It was kind of an emergency deal. I know that irrigation is kind of looked at separate from here, from the culinary side of it, but I think they've done well to try and pay for everything they can, and the council is trying to look out for the citizens to keep that. Another rate increase where they just did that 3 years ago to a minimum, and then that's why they requested a higher grant. So.
Commissioner McKee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just trying to go along with a couple of other thoughts and strength. I don't want to get too hung up on that, John. I think the board knows that. But at the same time, the hope that you've had is the one that's governed from the national. And, I've tried to move to Coach 75, which is 15% loan, which still be underneath that amount. And I'm not projecting 15% loan. But I wish it had come out a couple of things. What happens in other communities, in my own community, and this is a story from the the total in this house system for impact fees and connection fees is $15,000. In my community, for residential to get a new connection, it's $5,000 per connection. That's not the residential, that's just, that's not commercial, that's just residential. So I think there's some opportunities here. And I do agree with what you said. When I look at Sevier County, I think Sevier County is taking a little bit more enrollment compared to Janet than the rest of the other stuff. I think you need to find a balance of what I think in the consistency of what we do. I would think more something there in the third and half of the show to the general place.
This is probably more a comment to the board for a discussion later in the meeting, but remember we have a soft cap of $5 million, and I haven't heard those words expressed in the last 24 months or so, but that will lead to additional discussion later. But I understand the concerns about raising water rates, and yet we all want free services if we could get them. Unfortunately, government and critical needs all cost money, so I think we have to be willing to have the political fortitude to make those decisions and do this. And citizens have to be willing to pay. If we take 1,500 residential equivalent units and divide it across 6.4 million, that's $12 a month per connection, not counting interest. That's $140 a year. It adds up to money, but going without water for 3 or 4 days, which will only get worse with time, is it worth $140 a year to an individual, to a business, to pay $400 or $500 or $800 more per year? It probably is. So I think I could not support this proposal that's here. 50-50 is kind of on the low end of where I would be willing to go in terms of this, because I think you can support more as much as it's politically not what you would like to do to your citizens. So we have people in here every month that are asking for the same thing and get pushed to have to go back and take these on. So, it's just a comment.
Was there a motion in the comment?
There was no motion in that, yeah. I was going to let somebody else be nicer than you.
The chair would entertain a motion if anyone is so moved. Mr. Chair, I have one more question to ask, please. If by chance you didn't get approval for funding today, are you in the position to purchase the elevation valve and shall we offer time for another year?
That would get them, possibly get them buying, but I think the longer they put this off, the more it's going to cost, and it would be better to tackle it now. I don't know how you feel about it.
I actually contemplated this. I asked you 3 months ago, if I'm still installing elevation valve in the sound tank, can we buy time? And we felt like we might at the most be able to buy 3 to 5 years. But the problem was in 3 to 5 years, the impact would be double on the system as far as if the growth continues and the demand for our supply. Our biggest concern, my biggest concern is all my eggs are in one basket. I have one source of water. Any kind of seismic activity, I'll have a city of 2,500 people without any water drinking. And I'm an Eagle Scout. And I believe in being prepared and having a secondary source.
Thank you. I would move that we approve the application at 1/3 rent, 2/3 loan, 2.5% interest, and 30-year term.
Second. Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner McKee and a second by Commissioner Adams. Any discussion on the motion?
I'd like to express the motion.
Commissioner Adams with a second. Mr. Galecki would like to make a substitute motion.
Yeah, 50% loan, 50% grant.
A substitute motion at 50%.
And at 2.5%.
2.5%. Thank you, Mr. Galecki, for a second to that motion.
I'll second that motion.
Mr. Farrell seconds the motion. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're going to do a show of hands. So all in favor with a show of hands, please. So we have Commissioner Richardson, yes, in favor, Commissioner Wickerson, Commissioner Jarrett, Mr. Farrell, Mr. Galecki, and those opposed by show of hands. We have Commissioner McKee, Commissioner Madsen, Mr. Zanotti, Mr. Ellis, and Commissioner Adams, and Commissioner Potter. So we have more opposed than four, so that motion fails. We'll go back to the original motion. And Candace, do you have the exact figures on where 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? Let's figure out exactly what we're talking about here in our next 8 minutes.
Thank you.
$2,946,000.
Good morning. I am Mayor Brady from the City of Green River.
I am Jonathan Johansson with Johansson and Tuttle Engineering.
And this is for a project for culinary, drainage, sewer, and street improvements. So we've combined four projects into one based on our 213 capital project list that we made. Back in 2013, we made a quite an extensive list of what needed to be done in the city for all four of these items, and we have done some of our own because I'm not sure of the year, but Rural Water came in and helped us set new prices and new structure for our water and sewer. And since then, water and sewer has started looking good, and we actually have excess funds in there that we're able to use to help fund this project as well as others that we've done on our own. And the first project is to replace pipe. All of these three projects on the culinary water section is they're all old clay pipes, and they're only 4 inches, and we want to increase it to 8 inches. And the fire hydrants that are included in this are all to help us meet code, which is fire hydrants seem to be 1,000 feet apart at least, and so we are looking to upgrade and bring that up to code. Drainage also, we are trying to bring that up to code. It is sitting in front of a car wash, and I don't know if you've ever been to Green River, but in front of Shady Acres RV park as well. And the problem is that when we get a heavy rain, then it drains into the sewer system, which is a bad thing, and we need to get that fixed. And we have talked with the owners because we're going to have to go through their land, and they have agreed to allow us to go through that and get that done. The sewer project, we have two there. Again, this is concrete pipe, which is falling apart. There was a study done and pictures taken inside, and they have noticed that there was broken pieces inside the pipe. And so those two projects are for that reason. And the street pavement project, right now they are basically down to dirt roads, and they need to be improved. A few years ago we did get money to improve quite a few of our roads, and they are in great shape still. And little by little, we are trying to go back and get the rest of those in Green River that need to be done. So we are asking for a 50-50 split of $663,185 and asking for $331,585 grant. And although we don't expect it, if there is any overage cost, we are able to handle that.
If you could for me explain where your cash match is coming from?
Cash match? Throughout the years, actually because of the great council that I have, we have been very good with our money, and we have watched it. And some of this money is coming in from our taxes. And we did understand that up until about 7 years ago, Green River is one of the few cities in the state that does not have a property tax. And so in an election year, we stuck our necks out and put in a property tax, and it was voted in, and it must have been a good thing because everybody got reelected. So $200,000 a year is about all we get from our property tax, so that goes into that fund. And one of the things that we promised our citizens was that if they approved the property tax, which they did, then it would mainly go for infrastructure. So $200,000 a year goes into that. And again, our sewer and water divisions are actually finally making money because of what Rural Water suggested. And we followed their suggestions, and now we are able to help out more than we've been able to.
Thank you, Mayor. I appreciate that. Questions on the board?
Mm-hmm. Just moving on here and staying with others. You know, I think they're trying to help these girls. Not that they're turning the amount of cash to the other small area there. And then also just looking at the match on this house. This is on the kind of project that's really 1.4. And perhaps the grant is still at 3.4. It seems to me, you know, that the protocol comes to kind of do a piece of it. I'm just speaking in favor of some kind of support.
They're trying to do it. Again, that position that we recover the 15% continuously is overrun. So is that included in the 331,600 cash match, or is this maybe 6,000 approximately contingency yet another part of money that you could put towards the project?
The contingency is included in the 663,000 total. We didn't break it out. We kind of clumped things. For example, we have the water pipe and the hydrants all together, and the contingency and the engineering is all clumped in each utility and road improvements. So the contingency is there at 15%. Yes.
Any further questions, Mr. Adams?
Well, this is the kind of application that I think the board has been receptive to in the past, where somebody comes in and has a cash match, and they're willing to put their cash up and on a 50-50 basis. So I'll make a motion to approve the project.
Mr. Madison has made a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Madison has seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Can I ask, I would like to ask Nathan and Beth a question as far as, you know, what's the rate on drinking water? Do you have grants available on drinking water and water quality? I'm
going to go first. When we do an application for drinking water, we follow the same protocols here, so they would qualify for any grant or reduced interest that we would have in our fund. I will say that right now our fund is pretty heavy on loan money and not as much grant available. So we wouldn't be able to do 50-50 at this point. I don't think it would be more along 20 or 30% grant is probably what our board would look at. I can't speak for them, but that's kind of been their mindset recently.
I guess that might be, you know, often the last two applications are where we'll come to you first and see what kind of deal we can do. So it's kind of like, I guess, with you know, Nathan and Beth, it's kind of like, okay, where are you at? So it's not like they're shopping around and we have an understanding. You know, rather than making a hard grant, so okay, go see what we can get, we have a better understanding of where the applicants, what availability they have. Does that make sense? Okay.
Thank you, Mrs. Fletcher. The motion carried, so this will be placed on the priority list for funding at our next meeting.
Great. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mr. Moeller has been withdrawn. So our next applicant is Milford City for their water master plan. $21,250 for grants.
Please introduce yourself to the record and just briefly tell us about your project. Good morning. I'm Nolan Davis, Mayor of Milford City. This is Jesse Rout, engineer from Sunrise. This is our city administrator, Michaela Beeler, and Councilman Wayne Hardy's Overwater. I'd like to thank the board for an opportunity to meet here this morning and make a request for funding to do a water system master plan. About a year and a half ago when I took over as mayor, I sat down with my administrator, who's been newly appointed for the last couple of years, and we tried to come up with a long-term plan. In our discussion, we found out that Milford City has not had a water plan, a sewer plan, an irrigation plan, or a drainage plan done in the last 20 to 25 years. We've got an opportunity to have a lot of girls right now in Milford. We have a mine that has started up that is employing 175 people right now. We have a possibility of Potash Ridge locating there, which would employ about 4,000 people just outside of Milford and Beaver City. We have one of the largest solar projects in the state of Utah taking place in Milford right now. We have four small farms that have been built, and they're in the process of doing three large ones just north of Milford. The problem we have is we're going to have a lot of growth, and we don't know how it's going to tax our water. We have one tank and one well right now. We had to move one well about 12 years ago because of the arsenic level from the mines that were west of Milford. So part of our goal was to see where we're at, come up with a plan, and part of the plan was to go ahead and start and with the water project, then go ahead and do a sewer management project, an irrigation, and a drainage. So the first part of the process was make an application to do our water project. I sat down with Jesse Ralph from Sunrise, who's kind of piggybacked off the service districts. I've been using this gentleman here in service district number 2 and service district number 3, where we're building some fire departments, we build hospitals, we build EMS center. And so I have a real good relationship with Jesse, so in conversation I said, is this possible? What do we need to do? Because I'm not a hydrologist. I don't know the first thing about water except that it runs downhill. So I asked him, what could we do? How do we go about it? So he sat down, and this is kind of where we're at. Like, he helped us get all the information and make applications to the board. We did try to go with water quality. We don't qualify with the formula they use, so the next step was to come to CIB. I did ask my administrator in this last year's budget to go ahead and budget money toward this project, and we budgeted 50%. That's about all we can budget right now. The other concern we had when I took over is we were basically not in compliance with state rules and regulations when it comes to our general fund. In fact, to be honest, we was about $300,000 in debt toward the general fund. We was taking money out of water and sewer. With the efforts of my administrator and the council, we've actually paid that all back. We're in compliance, and we actually have a surplus in the state treasury for our general fund, which needs to be there. So I asked her to budget this money to pay for 50% and then try to apply to the board if we could get the other 50%. If not, what we'll have to do is we'll have to wait another year and then try to budget some more, and then it'll just take a little bit longer. We kind of feel a pressing need right now with everything that's taking place to try to come up with a water plan right now.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions on the board? Mayor Davis, thank you for being here. Thank you and compliments to you and your city administrator for paying the debt back. That's really a compliment to you and your staff. My question is 21,500 that you can cash and then borrow the rest, is going to be enough for your city to this project?
Yes, it'll be enough to do the water. One time we talked about combining water and sewer and drainage at the same time, but we don't want to get back into the same situation we're at, where we're, you know, putting ourselves in a bind and, you know, short of funding. So we thought we'd take it one step at a time and just do the water first. Then we'll budget more matching money and then come back if we can't budget at all and request more money to do the other projects at a later date.
So this for the first phase of your...
Yes.
In the open meeting discussion, there was a question about the funding assistance amount that's proposed. Was this the amount that was based on the engineering to do the application?
That funding there was based on, you know, what it was going to cost to basically have Sunrise tell me how to do the project and what to do. Like I stated earlier, I don't know the first thing about water, you know, updating water rights, you know, stuff of that nature. And so when I sit down with Jesse, that was part of the fee of the project, that we were going to have to, you know, pay their firm to help us, you know, get all the information. So
that has not been paid today?
No, that has not been paid yet.
That was my question. I guess I'm still a little confused on that. Is that part of the study or is that in preparation for the study?
That's in preparation. He helped us, you know, get the information and do the grant application.
So he's helping you just fill out a grant application you should have been able to do yourself? I mean, you're just filling out the city and contacts and dollar amounts and...
Well, I can allow Jesse to...
That is a good question. The funding assistance, it's been abbreviated from funding assistance and administration. That represents, again, we've been working with the city for almost a year now, putting together an idea of their needs, what the scope of the master plan would be, meeting with city council, and compiling the information that goes into the application. So it's not just filling out the application, and then bringing them through the process here with the mayor. And so hopefully that gives a better idea of what that represents. Internally, it's an internal cost that we bear. It's packaged in the agreement with the city. It hasn't been paid. It's contingent upon the project being funded, and then that's a cost that's been proposed in there. Now, if that were to represent a challenge to the project, having that way, we can relook at that, but that is what that represents and the costs that are incurred for that.
So we built in the cost of preparation into the actual study amount. This raises another issue with, I mean, we have engineers acting to be able to provide your violation of SEC rule, but that's a whole other discussion we've been going through for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Ellis. Any further questions? I want to entertain a motion if anyone is still willing.
Well, I will start. I'm a little still concerned about that funding assistance. I think it was a pre-expense part of the trying to be capturing that cost. So, knowing that is half and half involved, I am going to put a motion forward that we rent $20,000 already for this loan as part of this.
Mr. Jarrett, motion to approve of $20,000. Is there a second?
Second.
I do have a question. Will Commissioner Madden have a second and then a question? Go ahead.
I guess the question that I just have, this is just a protocol of what you can do, and I understand this one. Mr. Jarrett's making this, we've got to be careful about whether we're not having dependence on the other one. The cash match that they're putting toward that, could that count toward that in line for the question? protocol and what we structure to do to.
Well, I think they have the money before the match, the $20,000, and I think that they have to do with $2,500. They already have one too far low of it. Just out of pocket, they should have a reserve with them.
I guess this goes back to what Richard brought up last month as far as competitive bid process. I think the Derby did it on it. If it was a bigger project, we would be going out for competitive bid because they've already been charging against it. Is that correct?
Yeah, it seems that way. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And to your question, Commissioner McGee, I mean, they are including that in the total request package.
So I agree with Commissioner McKee that they're putting up 21.5 out of their own pocket. It's a matter of semantics to me. That 21.5 can count towards the $2,500 whether they've already paid it or billed it into the thing, it's coming out of their pocket. I'll make a substitute motion we grant the application as submitted.
Mr. Adams has made a motion to approve as submitted. Mr. Donati has seconded. Any discussion on that motion? Mr. Jarrett?
Okay, I'm really not understanding your logic because the CID is putting in $21,000 in terms of this, which I'm probably going to consider pre-already expansion. You are going to retain the one half of that donation charge. So I'm not understanding what you're all saying.
CID can reimburse.
What Commissioner McKee said is correct, CID can reimburse for new costs. And the cost of the 2003 can come out of the city's matching funds because when we get here. The question is still there, though. I'm sure that's what we're meaning. They can spend their money on what, and if they came here, with a project, and they'd already incurred costs up to that point, they can count that as matching costs on an application. But that doesn't mean CID will reimburse for anything. We will only reimburse going forward for costs that will occur after the board has authorized final funding. So anything dated prior to that, we won't reimburse. I understand what Commissioner Jarrett's trying to get to, but Mike McKee, Commissioner McKee is correct.
The reality of these powers is that CID will reimburse 50% of each invoice we've received in the eligible period, correct?
If the motion includes not to include that, then we won't go into 50% of the eligible invoice. That's how the plan goes forward. So there is kind of an encumbrance with our reimbursement process on plan. We pay 50% of an invoice.
This is kind of a small amount. Typically in signing, we try to help understand things. I understand Mr. Jeff coming from this little bit of management and what is the funding. So if we make the motion wanted to include that, you make it so that it fits all the protocols, I think it would, if that was his information. Would you like to clarify, Commissioner?
I just assume that the details will be worked out with CID, and they won't reimburse for anything that's not eligible. So I make a motion to fund it as presented.
And Commissioner Manson has, Commissioner Donati has the second. We've had discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? This will be put on the prioritization list for funding consideration at next meeting at $21,250.
Okay, we thank the board for an opportunity to be here. Have a good day.
Thank you.
County Fire Improvement District, number two, would like to come forward.
Hi, I'm John Jensen, Fire Chief of Manti City.
I'm Mayor Jeff Cox from Perry City, a member of the Santee County Fire District Board.
And I am also on the board. We have ten different station fire stations on our fire district. And they chose us to come and speak to you guys. We're the lucky ones. We are here to ask for replacing some really old, worn-out, urban-faced fire trucks. They're anywhere from 30 years and older. And we feel like with the way the fire is growing in the wildland area, we need to start, well, we've been starting on it, but we need some help getting these trucks updated. Where you've got lots of various square miles that these trucks will be going in that are high risk, which you guys have seen in your packets. We're from 11 to an 8. 11's the highest, and we go down to only an 8, which is a really high risk area. We have lots of cabins, homes that are built up in the oak brush, the timber, which you guys seen the other day on the news here, how it can really spread faster. So we're asking for your help to fund us with our match of $600,000.
I'd also like to say that the equipment we're asking for is specialized for these areas, that this equipment will help us fight the fires in those areas and protect the structures that are out there.
Are these recreational second home type structures, or are they primarily permanent?
Both. There are secondary homes, but there are also primary homes in these areas. We do have some areas that were built years and years ago that are used for primary homes that are out in the wildland interface with very little resources out there.
Questions from the board? Chief, you had five of the fire trucks in 2009 and four in 2011. Are they the ones in good condition?
The ones that we got. The ones we got from when you guys funded us were their structured vehicles. Type 1s is what we call them. They're for house fires, okay. The big engines. These are going to be a smaller type, type 5. It's a smaller truck that can be able to get up into the hills easier.
And this is replacing other trucks. This isn't replacing any of those. So this is in addition to those trucks that we've done in the past. These are older trucks that have been used out in the interface that we're now getting to try and upgrade and make the job of the volunteers a little easier and a lot more reliable. It's really frustrating when you. And we've had this happen before, have an engine break down on you on the way through the fire. So.
Another question is that, where's your matching fund, the $600,000? Is it already in place, and what's the source of that matching fund?
Yes, that is already in place. The source is a tax that every city that we represent, and we represent 13 cities, that they put on either their water bill or power bill to the citizens. Yes, and we've built that fund up over the years to be able to do the match.
Thank you.
Like I say, the majority of these fire stations are all volunteer. Having to put in, significant to keep the people in Santee County. you know, protecting from fire, and that moved to approve as listed.
Mr. Blakey's made a motion to approve as requested. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Farrell has seconded. Question? Discussion? Commissioner Adams and then Mr. Oates.
In 2009 and 2011, we funded this 9 fire trucks. And it looks like there are 6 fire engines existing in 6 different communities. Type 6 fire engines. Vegetation.
A lot of those.
If you're in San Juan County, you need 20 or more fire. A lot more than that.
Would you like to go with that?
Go ahead.
Maybe my question is a follow-up. So, how many in the Central Service District, how many total apparatus are there then? So, you've done, this will be 16 between 9/11 and today, we approve this funding.
All the ones we got. Maybe war engines, which are for fighting house, much bigger. We have 10 different fire stations, 11 different fire stations.
Right, how many what's the total fleet? You got 4 engines in every station, so there's 40 of them, 44, or 2, or
20? It varies per community.
I just want to know if we're 16, are there still 16 more, are there 20 more, are there 30 more, are there 4 more?
This will get the majority of our fleet. There would only be maybe 1 or 2 other trucks that wouldn't be. This would get the majority of our fleet at least 20 years old or newer. We do have programs in place to try and replace trucks as they get older. This is just helping us out to get our fleet newer.
Standby fee that gets charged to everyone, whether it's permanent resident or secondary resident. Is it the same fee for either, or is there a higher fee on secondary?
No, it's the same fee for all.
I commend you, if you're coming in with $600,000, too often they come in with nothing. You say, well, if you're not running fire trucks, but some they have to be replaced. So, I think historically, you come in with like 50-50, and would encourage you to come back next time with more than 50%. Keep up the good work. I'm just glad to see that. We don't see that often enough.
As far as like the big hollow fire,
the wood hollow fire.
The wood hollow fire that, you know, had to evacuate cities like Fairview. We got a lot of brush.
Yeah, well, and on that fire, we lost 60 structures. So that was a major disaster for us.
Just a comment. There's been a risk assessment done statewide, and a lot of it has come from the State Forestry Fire and State Lands Office. And interestingly, Santa County is probably one of the highest rated bush areas in the whole state, primarily because of the subdivisions that are in our interface. And for that reason, a majority of the funds that the legislature appropriated for California fire have gone to projects in Santa County. So we have an extremely really high NPS situation relative to potential for fire in Santa County, and for the spread of fire it takes tons and lives. So I do want to call your attention to 3513, where this district has purchased other engines without GOD funding. So they really try to use the money they get to keep their fleet updated. They do move the trucks around when they get in the trucks so they get the best use on them in areas where it's not such a large station. We had a county fair just a week ago, and we had a buying challenge, and we had 3 of our fire departments that couldn't participate at the last minute because they had to go fight a fire and spring city. So if they're on call, they're volunteer, they do a tremendous service, and I would hope that you would feel safe doing that.
Thank you, Mr. Barrett. I'll call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Commissioner McKee is out of the room. So thank you, gentlemen. That concludes the prior.
I have a procedural question.
Yes, sir.
Is Greg and Mr. Jarrett allowed to vote on this project?
No. Mr. Blakey, are you on the fire district?
I am not.
I just know from a recent letter, you're in that county, and your commissioner is. That's not what I read, but.
So my understanding from Tom is that this specifically been his advice to this board, and this board has followed it, is to abstain from voting if you are on the board of the applicant entity. In this case, the applicant entity is the fire district, right? Right. Now, there may be other reasons why you want to abstain if you were on the county commission, if you believe there were conflicts of interest.
That's exactly what I thought he said in the letter. If you were on a county commission and there was a project in your county that was being considered by the CIP board, you should abstain.
All those who abstain? Mr. Jarrett abstain for the record. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Ivan Kidney? Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning, board members. I'm Chris Hart, mayor of beautiful Ivan City. And this is our city manager, Dale Coulomb. As we begin, I'd like to thank you personally for the assistance that you gave us in the acquisition of a new ambulance after the state dramatically increased our service area and we found ourselves with vehicles that would not support that. And so I want to report to you that that ambulance is in service. It's the pride and joy of our emergency response fleet. And so we appreciate that very much. And also, we're stashing away money to replace that on our own when the time comes. Impact fee studies and impact facility plans seem to be getting more expensive as time goes by. And for a small city like ours, it's a difficult thing to get the projects done and every 5 to 10 years, as has been mentioned here, go through that process at $50,000 or more per study to keep them updated. And so we're approaching you today asking for your help to the tune of approximately half, probably less than half actually by the time we get the studies out to bid, for a series of impact fee studies that we thought we'd be able to do in-house after we had the crash, as it were, and growth dropped to near nothing in our city. We had to take a look at how we were going to accomplish these studies with very little coming in the way of impact fees. And so we put on the shoulders of our one-man city engineer staff, our city engineer, to try and accomplish that, and he worked his way through that as best he could. Unfortunately, we went through 3 years where we had significant flooding in our city, and in response to that, his time was taken for a period of months during that period of years to try and deal with the immediate needs we had in the city. And so now we find ourselves kind of behind the eight ball here and needing to get a series of them done all at once. And so I'm going to have Mr. Coulomb, if that's all right, explain the details of our request.
Thank you. These comprehensive studies that we're seeking assistance on date back to 2006 through 2008. We have finished one study completely, the master plan, the impact fee facilities plan, and the impact fee analysis for water We did some partial work on transportation. We were able to turn that over to our local metropolitan planning organization, who is assisting with the preparation of the master plan. We're not certain if that will include something that we can classify as an impact fee facility plan or not, but it has not been included in our request here. We have also undertaken the master plan and impact fee facilities plan for stormwater due to the flooding. We didn't feel that we could wait any longer. That was a high priority. As is transportation, because as projects come into our city, we know our information is severely outdated. When the 2010 census came out, it estimated our population much lower and our build-out much lower. We're now estimated at a build-out of approximately 20,000 as opposed to 35,000 people. And we have gone from issuing 200 plus building permits in 2008 to we're still averaging under 100 since the recovery from the Great Recession. And during the recession is not the time to really update your impact fees studies. We had the census coming out, and we have had to wait for what was the new normal as far as growth. We now know that. We've completed the water study in 2013. As I indicated, in 2014 we began the transportation side of that and expect the study to return to us quickly, as well as the storm water study. That still leaves impact fee analyses to be done on those two. But that still leaves four impact fee comprehensive studies that need to be completed for secondary water. We've been having developers install a dry secondary water irrigation system to preserve our culinary water usage and use some of the reuse water that is partially treated by the sewer district, as well as some untreated water coming from Dunlop, sewer, parks, and public safety. There's been a significant change in our public safety department during that time as well. We actually combined law enforcement services with the city of Santa Clara. And so their updated impact fee analysis was very simple. It's they just pay whatever the bill is that we send them according to our contract and the percentage that they've agreed to pay. For us, it becomes much more complicated. We now have to have a master plan and impact fee facilities plan for both cities. We also provide in our public safety department fire services, animal control services, and as the mayor mentioned, ambulance services, which we also cover Santa Clara as well as well, we're at 526 square miles, and that's why you graciously gave us a grant for an ambulance. We find ourselves busting at the seams in our public safety building. We have actually, since we're providing law enforcement for Santa Clara, we share some of that building of theirs for our law enforcement, and made room for ambulance to move in with our existing firehouse. But it needs to be remodeled. In the existing plan, it called for new fire stations to be built on the west side and east side of our city. The current plan is we don't have the money to acquire that property and to build such structures. We've leased a space in Kayenta, which is on the western side of our city, where we house a couple of brush trucks for wildland fire, because that's where that would be most likely, the type of fire out there. And our existing old firehouse in the middle of town has become our ambulance center and our main fire center. We have a volunteer fire department as well, and so it's mainly to house equipment. And so we need to add on a wing that will house our ambulance services and our personnel that are staffing that station full-time, as well as to house our fire engines to treat structure fires. I'm an attorney by background. That may be bad to some of you, but I see a legal issue here that concerns me as far as liability risk to the city when you have impact fee studies that are that old. They can be subject to legal challenge. We've had Family Dollar recently come into our city and construct, and we knew that our transportation fee was suspect. We invited them to provide their own study, and they had studies available and did so, and we used those studies to calculate a more accurate impact fee to their satisfaction. But that is burdensome to say to a developer, and we are having more commercial development actually make inquiries in our city, to always fall back on the provision of your impact fee ordinance to say, well, you can provide your own study if you don't like ours, which we recognize are out of date. And so we need help in getting things current, and the estimated total cost of $250,000, of which we're asking for a 50% matching grant, that is a comprehensive update. That would be for four complete studies, which would be a master plan, impact fee facilities plan, and impact fee analysis, and then two impact fee analyses. We've used what we consider to be conservative numbers based upon estimates of consultants that we have talked to. We have not yet put it out formally to an RFP. We have received estimates ranging from $40,000 to $60,000 on the study portion alone. And from one financial company, we have received an estimate on impact fee analyses anywhere from $15,000 to $25,000. We've used an estimate for the four complete studies of $55,000 total, and used $15,000 for each of the impact fee analyses. And that's how we arrived at our $250,000 cost. To answer the question that was raised at the beginning of the meeting, when we held our public hearing, there was no public comment. And this matter has been discussed with the council previously, and we have budgeted for at least our matching portion to update all of these studies during this next year. The council supports and understands the need to update our impact fee studies and fee analyses, both to attract growth with offering fair impact fees, as well as to avoid liability potential to the city. Do you have any questions for either of us?
Thank you, gentlemen.
Mine is a question, but I think it's a comment. I appreciate the fact that you're looking forward and trying to keep these things, because by us helping you, you help yourself. But the minutes were the concerning part. You know, there's no mention of cost at all, and I think that should be one of the things that are included in any public hearing, is that what the cost or the amount we're going after, and it's so vague that they just left the question in my mind. What if we were to just give it to you in the form of a loan? That is taxable, that can. So I think that just basically that was my comment.
Thank you. I appreciate that, and I don't mean it as an excuse, but during that time we were also in the transition of directors of finance, and I won't bore you with the details of the soft story there.
Help me understand the process here, because my staff had to pick me up off the floor and nearly called 911, and I saw $250,000 for impact fee analysis. They called my transfers. So, you have to have engineering studies for water, transportation. You have to have a planning study in addition to that, and then an impact fee analysis. Are those the primary components going into this?
There's three components. One is a master plan that goes beyond the impact fee period, but it's your overall plan for your city and may actually go as far as to your estimated build out. You then have an impact fee facility plan, which covers 6 to 10 years, but no, usually no further than 10 years. It's a period in which you would use your impact fees that you collect. It would identify the eligible impact fee projects for which you would charge impact fees. You then have the financial analysis, which would be your impact fee analysis. And now the state has required that each of those experts actually certify their work and that they take on the liability for their projects. So for the four comprehensive plans that I've talked about, I'm talking master plan, impact fee facilities plan, and the impact fee analysis. For just the impact fee analysis, the estimate that we used was $15,000 per impact fee analysis.
Okay, and you'll be going after competitive bid on this?
Yes.
All right, because I made some inquiries myself and the number just came in far lower.
The cost tends to vary a little bit based on the complexity of the particular study, but we would like to get the list of those in the top two to include in the article.
I'm sure that'll be one of the ones that you added out to.
Mr. Ellis, may I respond further? The item just shortly before us, the water master plan, their estimated cost was $42.5, and if we're using a total estimate for our comprehensive plans of $55, if you added $15,000 to that, you would come up to $57.5, which is higher than the estimate that we used in coming up with our numbers.
Further questions from the board? Mr. Knight?
I just have a comment first. For those of you that you have considered going to Park City, I consider going to Islands. It's expensive, more fun.
Nice plug.
Thank you. And I'm glad that Mr. Cohen stopped. You may be stopped, but otherwise, being attending, you will pay more for service. You're like each minute. So if you want to make a decision, you better do it quick. With that, I make a motion to accept the proposal or request for the city of Hyatt.
So there's a motion from Mr. Zanai to accept as proposed. Mr. Chair has seconded. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Unless anyone opposes, I will call for a 15-minute break. Sitting in the office.
Okay.
Thank you.
your next
take your seat.
That's fine with me. Just tell me when you're ready. I am Lucy Francis, here today representing the Rockville Springdale Fire Protection District. I'm the chairman of the current board. And just, this is a pretty simple, hopefully straightforward request. We are looking to get a feasibility and impact, I'm still using our impact fee study. We want a feasibility study and master plan done of the fire department. We are 32 years old, created in 1983, and we've never had a study done. We have done quite well, however, in the past with the expertise of our fire chiefs, and we've relied on other board members to provide us with strategic planning and develop the services that we currently offer. We have a 4 ISO rating, which is very good for a rural area where we're at. We are on the edge of Zion National Park and service 13 square miles, but one of our significant and unique issues is that we service not only our residents, a small population of about 800 residents and commercial owners, but we also service about 3.2 million park visitors every year. So between Zion National Park services, they also have a fire department, we provide mutual aid for. They end up providing aid for us as well, but we aid them more than they aid us. So that's one of the unique issues that we face here in Rockville and Springdale. So as I was saying, in the past we relied on how to operate based on the recommendations of our past chiefs. We had an excellent chief who retired or resigned in 2013. And that was sort of the beginning of the story of why I'm here today. And what happened at that time is Chief Ryan Ballard brought to light at that time the need for department reform. And among those things were pay for our firefighters. We also have an EMS service that we started in 2000. But we wanted to be able to pay our firefighters. We were an all-volunteer service. That area of Springdale and Rockville does not have a very large population of people to draw upon for volunteer fire service, as we had been able to rely on in the past. So we needed to pay them. Granted, we only pay them $7.50 an hour. But that did help to allow us to create a 24/7 firefighter on-call service, which was important to us as a board to be able to provide to the citizens of Rockville and Springdale. So that on-call pay schedule created a gap, as you will, in our budget, and we needed to appropriate funds from our reserves. In the past, we have always been able to pay for everything ourselves. And we had some reserves that we had been saving for engines, apparatus, other equipment, if you will. And we took those funds basically to pay the wages of the staff that we had to start paying. And so that, most of our revenues come from standby fees. We do get property taxes. Springdale gives us a transient room tax as well. But probably close to half, $450,000 of about a $700,000 budget comes from standby fees, which are paid by the property owners of Rockdale and Springdale. So those figures that I just gave you are the most current figures, and they reflect more than a double increase in our standby fees for the residents. And so, as you can imagine, that precipitated inquiry on the part of the public to the board. They wanted to know how efficient we are. Does it really cost this much for fire protection and emergency services in the town of Springdale and Rockville? And so we took that question to heart. We would like to have a study done. Our board, our current five-member board, we are all volunteers. We come from varied backgrounds. I'm a retired journalism teacher. I don't really know how many fire trucks it takes to accommodate a town like Springdale with a population of tourism such as we have. And so we have come to the conclusion that at this point in our history, we need to develop a unified vision as a board that will direct us not only in the current time that we're in, but in the future. We want to be able to answer the questions that are put to us by the public and give them some definitive data as to our costs and have a professional expert study given to us that will analyze the data and give us a very accurate picture and an objective picture of our current services and how we can best maximize the equipment that we have and the staff that we have, because with the increase in the standby fees and the budget that we have, we made some really dramatic changes in the way that we perform our operations. Going to full on-call 24/7 pay, that was a big strategic change for us. So as a board, we do want to make sure that we've made the right decisions and that we can continue to make the right decisions. So that is why, and additionally, just to make a small correction, Candace, I think you had announced that Rockville has agreed to provide $600. They upped it to $1,000. And so for their town budget, that is quite a generous amount. And as Candace mentioned, we do have the support of both of our municipalities that we serve. Both town councils are approving matching to help us with our matching funds. Springdale in the amount of $10,000 and Rockville in $1,000. So our district is putting forth the remaining $9,000 of the $20,000 matching for a total $40,000 study fee is what we're looking at. And as some of the others have stated, we have not put out an RFP formally as of yet, but we have spoken to one major company where the estimate of $40,000 came from, which sounds in line with what Ivan's also reported for the cost of the study at this time. So with that, tried to be short and sweet, but
thank you, Ms. Francis. We appreciate that. Commissioner McKee? We have a motion from Commissioner McKee and a second from Commissioner Adams. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. We'll put that on the
presentation. No question. Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're probably look brave enough to show up all yourself. That's
thank you.
Town of Apple Valley for road improvements, $1.97 million.
We get 3 hours.
Believe me, I don't want to use 3 hours of your time. We'll make this as short and sweet as possible. First of all, I'd like to thank the board. By the way, I'm Richard Moser. I'm the mayor of the town of Apple Valley, and this is Rod Mills, our town engineer. I'd like to thank the board personally for funding our matching funds for putting this project together that you gave us last year. We've, over the last year, had a grand time putting this all together to make it happen. We've reworked this project time and time again, and just as as late as the last 90 days. I need to report to you at this time that the COG has, from Washington County, has given us a grant to secure our right-of-way issues that we have. The $20,000 that we had put into that Candace mentioned about contingency for legal, we don't need. We anticipated a battle with one of the residents over a piece of the property that we would need to require, and it was really quite refreshing that after we sat down and explained to him, he came to us and signed off, and it was great. So we don't need to have to worry about that. As far as what we're asking for, the improvements are going to make a huge impact in our community. Right now we have a 24-foot right-of-way that comes in off of Highway 59 into a bridge that's a single lane. In the last 10 years since we've been incorporated, we've had a number of small accidents on that bridge because you have to yield the right-of-way. Some of them have been in the middle of the evening when nobody's been around. They've gone off the guardrail. It's a real safety issue as far as our all of the facilities and services that the government provides are on the opposite side of the wash. And the study that we had done on the bridge shows that the footings are in sad shape. They're eroding. The wing walls are in very sad shape. They're falling apart and crumbling. The bridge, it needs to be replaced. The additional project will put in curb gutter, sidewalk, storm drain, and we scaled back quite a bit from the original plan. And the recent change in oil prices, which I guess could be considered good on one side, on one hand, and bad on the other hand, this will give us the opportunity to go in and do a double chip seal coat over nine miles of road in our town, which are currently a gravel surface out of the 14 miles that we maintain on a regular basis. We looked at a plan to blacktop those roads, and it would be a $22,800 burden per resident, which is putting it into an SIB to get that kind of work done would be a $1,280 per year increase on their property taxes, which most of our residents out there could definitely not afford to do. So this gives us an opportunity to use their tax dollars wisely and give them something other than just the dirt road. As far as some of the other features that will benefit from this is the Utah Power is planning on working with us to put in a substation to take some of the overhead lines, put them underground, and take away some of the safety issues of those large power lines coming across the highway, and pedestrian safety in our community as well. It'll give people the opportunity to walk in and out of the community without being on the road and in harm's way. So I think that's about it. Unless you have any questions, I can answer for you.
Commissioner, we appreciate that. Questions from the board?
With regard to the curb gutter sidewalk, what portion of the project is that going to? Is that putting, I guess my bottom line question is, are we enhancing private property by adding curb gutter sidewalk that has not existed before? Or is it just from the bridge, the entrance and exit from the bridge?
There will be curb gutter and sidewalk that will enhance the property, but it's in our right-of-way. We haven't expanded the right-of-way to do that. It'll be 500 feet in either direction and down to the stop sign.
And if I may, the enhancement that is associated with some of the private properties, because there are some private properties that are receiving curb and gutter under the current plan, those enhancement costs were incorporated in the acquisition values. So we took the cost of the curb and gutter and the enhancement out of the appraised value, and the number that the value that we're paying back for the property acquisition is the difference between those two numbers.
Historically, we have not funded curb and gutter sidewalk in areas that were enhancing private properties.
Right.
A question about a program that's under actually UDOT and the Joint Highway Committee. relative to off-system bridge replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Have we pursued making an application for the bridge piece of this under that scenario?
We have met with not only the board, but also the staff level people at UDOT relating to the bridge. It is exactly in that category, but for whatever reason, this particular bridge was never actually, and I don't completely understand the semantics in the UDOT program, but it was never actually listed in that program, even though it qualifies by the definition from our perspective. Having said that, they have offered some support for us, and we will be receiving some help from them on some specific issues relating to the bridge.
Could you elaborate on that
just a little bit? So, as you know, the work that was already funded in part by this board included the analysis of the existing bridge and some preliminary design work on the bridge. That's all been completed, and we're submitting that work to UDOT in hopes that they will help us with the funding that's specific to the bridge. And I don't know any numbers beyond that. We aren't any further on that.
So,
I have this question too. We're repaying the loan. What's your security or funding source on that?
We're going to use our sales tax revenues. We're planning on pledging those.
Is that right?
Well, we can pledge up to 70% of our sales tax. It isn't 70% that we'll be using as far as calculating what we have at this point. We're only pledging about 58%.
Is if you heard Mr. Chairman at the early opening said that we try to stay consistent with the interest that CBI charged on the loan, which was for the 2.5%. If that is the case, will you be able to manage that loan?
We've calculated it out, and if we need to, yes, we'll be able to take care of that. It's going to be a little tight, but we will be able to do it.
With that, I make a motion with the chairman to change that 1.5% to 2.5% and the remaining stay the same.
So there's a motion to approve as presented with the exception of the interest rate to 2.5%. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second.
And we have Mr. Winterton, we'll get that from you. The eye is quicker than the ear. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Alan Carson. A water master plan for a $10,000 grant. If you gentlemen would like to be quiet, I can just ask for a motion. Or you can introduce yourself and then I'll ask for a motion. Or you can talk and see where you're going.
Okay. I'm Kendon Godfrey. I'm the mayor of Clarkston.
Scott Archibald, county chair.
Thank you, Mayor. Scott, is there a motion to accept? So, Mr. Donnie Garuda has presented $10,000 grant. Is there a second? Mr. Farrell? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? I hope that wasn't unanimous.
Not bad at all. Thank you. Thank you.
Alan Joseph. So, can you introduce yourself?
I'm Ray Owens, mayor of the town of Joseph.
I'm Kelly Graham, the engineer for the town of Joseph.
And I'm just going to smile.
Good call.
We'll get it over in a hurry. We're here to ask for some comprehensive funding to do a comprehensive utility plan, water system, for our water system and roads. Our system and the water is beginning to age. Some of it's been in the ground over 50 years. We appreciate the help that we've had from the board on updating our collection system, and we have that completed. We have a new water tank and working great. I might mention that we've learned some tricks to use on that. That's our pump bill during the summer to pump water for the supplement our system has been about $2,500, and this last month's bill was $700. So that's really improved our system there, and it's made it possible that we can upgrade that system just a little bit beyond the SCADA to being able to monitor the elevation of the water in that upper tank, so we can manage that system even better and hopefully use the water to our advantage. And of course, down the line, we hope also to include a small hydro plant on the tail end of that system. We'd like to we need to do a thorough assessment of our roads. Some of them have been, well, I could remember riding bikes over them way back when there's still piles of dirt, and some of them are still fairly good, and some of them are going to need some serious replacement. I attended a meeting with UDOT not too long back and found out that it's much wiser to take real good care of what's good and kind of ignore that that's bad, so it's, you know, you come out ahead with your money by replacing the real bad stuff when it's really bad, and taking good care of your good roads. We also need to do some planning for our floodplain potential. FEMA didn't seem to accept their own study that came from the Baker Group back in Denver, Colorado. They said exactly what we wanted to do is to put a gate on our culvert that comes under the I-70 freeway, and why we're not off the floodplain because of I-70, I still don't know. But we want to look at that as well as part of this master plan. And we also want to look into a secondary irrigation system, and we have secured a $40,000 grant from Drinking Water Board to do part of this planning, and if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate that. Questions from the board? Staff would like to know the status of that DDW grant. Is that in secured?
It's been approved, sir.
And is there any cash coming from the city itself, or is that your cash coming?
That's from Matt.
Commissioner Adams?
All right, Ben, since you also, I move to approve.
Commissioner Adams to approve, is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Matson, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, and if Commissioner Adams loves that color of water that they send down the river to him, we get that every thunder shower and off Rock Candy Mountain. But it's healthy water, though. It's really healthy. Thank you.
The EPA told us that our yellow water was healthy, too.
We trust them, too, don't we?
We have a couple of matters for board discussion. First, if you look at this power line project discussion, we spent quite a bit of time last month on this. I think there were still some unresolved issues. Mr. Ellis has confirmed that he sent to staff regarding public utility, the revenue source containment, along with the security of the loan. If I can just paint my concerns quickly. We've done a couple of projects now that Mr. Roberts has painted as being
assistance to private business, or a pass-through of public money that is benefiting a private business. And it seems like we're heading down a road that was not the intent of the statute or this language. And I think as a board, we need to be very aware of the implications of that. And I know we had a discussion this far back as June, and I fairly distinctly remember Commissioner Key saying that this is where we wanted to go. We would approve another project. And I don't know that everyone fully understood what that statement meant. It's becoming clearer to me as we move forward in these types of projects. And so I do think that it would be prudent for the board to take a step back, not necessarily revisit the motion, but to make sure we understand what the purpose of this board is and what is legal for this board to do and what's appropriate for this board to do. And so having bookended the conversation as such, I'll open it up for board members to have any further discussion or legal counsel since you're grabbing the microphone.
Oh, I was just grabbing it because I feel like there are legal questions, so I wanted to be prepared. I do think it's not helpful to start with your death for a scheme, which of course there's the federal statute state that can offer your administrative rules, which have the effect of law, right? And working from the rules backwards, it is very clear in your rules, and I'm referring to the record form, Rule 99883, obviously, everyone on this board knows that I'm studying for now, so I actually don't have the, I wasn't at the last meeting, so apologies if I'm repeating or reading. It is clear that your rules, which have the force of law, require applicants to provide evidence and argument as to how the proposed funding assistance provides for planning, construction, and maintenance of public facilities for the provision of public services, right? And that comes from the federal requirements for the impact funds. Then it also adds additional requirements, which is that all applicants must demonstrate that the facilities or services provided will be available and open to the general public, and that the proposed funding assistance is not merely a device to pass along low-interest government financing to the private sector. It third says that all applicants must demonstrate that any arrangement with the lessee of the proposed project will constitute a true lease and not a disguised financing arrangement. There's a few other things there about fair market value, which I can read to you. And that the applicant must submit evidence and legal opinion that it is the authority to construct, own, and lease the proposed project. So, you as a board, or your predecessor as a board, have established pretty clearly that this is the policy for your board. As I'm sure Tom spoke before, some of those concerns about not passing along not providing government financing to the private sector comes with constitutional concerns and other cases that have been decided around the state. But in general, that's the policy that you as a board have set for yourself in interpreting what the federal and state law is. Now, if I can answer any questions,
thank you, Council. We appreciate that. Commissioner Key, what are you?
I don't know if this would be an appropriate time to do that, but there was some questions that were asked by the board last meeting, and what we call the board did approve it under spending funds. But Eric Johnson and Ralph Kendall from the board chair, from the 6th County organization, and I think if there's a specific question to that, at least the information that I have is there's really nothing that has been brought up that they haven't been able to fully address at this point. So I think that there's, from my point of view, they're the legal counsel that has been working through that, and there's a specific question to that. I think it would be nice if we could let them address it if there is a concern. All the information at least that I've had is full recordings of everything, and there's some question about that, it might be nice to allow them to be able to respond to that.
Are there specific questions? Michelle?
Thank you. Probably just lots, but I really got me thinking at the last meeting when the book was transmission line came out was really, we were talking about a $1.8 million project to be funded and built, including the private sector donation into that. But it's a bridge to nowhere. That 2 mile segment does not increase capacity, does not increase the amount of electricity going anywhere. It's the tail end of a 40 or 80 mile transmission line that begins the generation plan and would begin where we're beginning. So it seems odd to start at the end rather than the beginning. If the issue discussed is brownouts and lack of power in that area, that project doesn't do anything to address that particular issue. So that troubles them to me. But the bigger thing was, it was the camel's nose, that we really made a commitment now. If we build a bridge to nowhere, did we make a commitment to fund a $40+ million project? And we didn't really discuss, are we funding a $40 million project? And then that makes me think, a $40 million project over the next 2 or 3 years, when our revenues are going to be down 40-50% from where they have been in the past several years, do we want to stop funding water projects and sewer projects and road projects that are desperately needed in the state? Senior citizen centers, city hall, libraries, are we willing to set that all aside to fund these major projects that even take a big piece of that capacity? Which then led me to the next thought of our $5 million soft cap, which we tend to not give any thought to. But there's a lot of projects coming in now, and entities that have capability to access the public markets that want $10, $15, and $20 million, and we've had plenty of money, so we've been willing to fund those projects. But do we need to, as we see our revenue drop off, I mean, if we get $70 or $80 million this year, we will probably have a pretty good year. I've gone back, that's why I asked staff to put together revenue history so we could see it. I went back and I looked at oil and natural gas prices. We're way off from where we were. I don't see oil prices going up in the near future, being the next 2-3 years, above $60, maybe $70 a barrel. We were living in the heyday at $100, $120 a barrel when we accumulated a surplus of $50+ million. Those days are not going to happen in the coming years. And so are we willing to throw everything else out to do these types of projects, which then gets me into the question of, are they eligible projects? I met with Rob Walker London, Eric Johnson, and Tom Roberts was with me. I asked the question, but I couldn't get answers to everything. I don't know who's buying this power. Couldn't articulate it to me. Essentially, we're building a line for Moon Lake and for Rocky Mountain Power for them to be transferring it, and we'll charge them a capacity fee or something like that. But who are the end users? Did we really facilitate end users that wasn't just a facilitation of private business, but just building a power line for two private companies? I don't have an answer to that. I'm not comfortable now that what we've committed to there is legal. If we want to extend this out to the port facility, you can have the same arguments on there. We've got the exact same issues that on that deal of trying to take equity. We Tom raises the constitutional issue of those subscription stock and equity positions. I've dealt with that one for 20 years at the state level in the investment world. It's a tough road to get through. Susan Meisman and I have had that conversation many times on another board we've been on. I don't know how you get there. You can legally try to mask it and hide it, but I don't know if you can get there with existing court law with the UPST case that has been cited in the information Tom's given us. So
there have been issues about that too.
Yeah.
And we're putting the court project not on the agenda, so luckily for me, we can't say this is too much except the other way to be able to discuss.
Well, we're not taking action on it, so we'll discuss it anyway. For me, there are lots of open questions on both of these projects, and we as the board, where are we headed? Now, I understand the intent of all of this is really to keep economic growth going in these counties, whether it's coal production or oil or gas, and I understand that, and I think that needs to happen. Somehow we have to make them survive. Is this board the one that should be in the role to be doing that? I question that. But I don't know if we want to open the door for another means of someone taking these proceeds from us and making them available in another means, because that just opens the door wide open for other uses of the system. So I'm not satisfied on this particular project. I've got all the answers I'd like. I understand what's trying to be accomplished. I think until we build 38 more miles of transmission line, we don't have a project. And so are we as a board committed to another $40 million into this project or more? And are we willing to do that in the course of the next 3 years at the expense of things that you need in your county that are less important than this or more important than this? And that's the question to me, and we as a board did not have that discussion. We haven't really focused on that discussion. And we need to think about that over the next three years because we're not in the same situation we were 2 or 3 years ago when we were accumulating. We had more money than we could get rid of. We couldn't get applicants in. We were out begging for people to bring money to us. That's not our problem right now, and I don't think it will be in the coming years unless we send a strong message out. We don't want to fund anything but very specific projects. So,
Mr. Ellis is correct in that one of the roles of this board has always been and will always be balancing, you know, the revenues that come in with the projects that we fund, and we are coming off a period of very high revenues, and we are definitely in a period of very low revenues. And so it is incumbent on us as a board to try and balance that. And so that is a very valid point, and one I think we all need to be very cognizant of as we review and improve the project. I have a question for you, Susan. When the board approved the court funding for the lease on that, it was very contingent on legal approval, environmental approval, and all of those things. I'm not sure that we got into that level of detail with the power lines project, but the statement has been made that there are questions and concerns about the legality of that statutorily, constitutionally, et cetera, et cetera. My question is, who determines the legality of these types of things, the constitutionality of these types of things? Mr. Roberts, I think, was fairly adamant in the last meeting that he had reservations, concerns that they were not, and the board appreciates his counsel on that, but voted to move forward with it. So if it turns out, I mean, who makes those determinations and how does that affect this board's decision?
So there's a couple of ways that that issue could raise itself. Obviously, it sounds like there's a lot more questions that need to be answered before I think Tom could, you know, Tom's opinion sounds to me like it's not 100% certain because it sounds like there's a lot of detail to both of these projects that remain unknown. How it's determined really, honestly, whether something is constitutional or not, is when a court case is brought in, the court says that it is so, right? Which isn't to say that I would advise the board to undertake unconstitutional or illegal actions and hope that nobody sues. But really, that's how it is determined if something is unconstitutional or illegal. And in the case that Senator Ellis was referencing, that, you know, one arm of state government to do an independent entity for that to get what's called a declaratory judgment to get the court to determine whether something was constitutional or not. So that's one avenue that can be brought. We brought what's called a declaratory judgment act, and we asked the court to apply it ahead of time. Or some entity that's affected by this project, and I'm sorry, I don't know the project intimately enough to know who that might be, could choose to stop the project or to have a court determine that some money. Or this court class. So court is the short answer. But nonetheless, I mean, obviously, I would invite you, and I assume Tom would invite you to accept the project that was clearly or almost certainly you were on constitution. Do follow the question?
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Ellister.
I guess it raises a question, probably more for Candace, but when I close a bond issue at the state level, I have to have an AG's opinion and bond council opinion. All of these things. Do we have an AG's opinion when we close bonds on the legality of projects? Do we just have bond council opinions?
The bond council
on both sides. The bond council on the side of the
so that's the finding that that entity is legally formed entity and has the power and interest of this bond. Yeah. And if the legal property came to their own digital.
Could we ask Bill Frazier to come forward and the bond council member for a second?
Yeah.
Can you speak into the mic, please, Bill? I'm having a hard time.
We couldn't hear Candace, by the way.
Yeah,
pull her mic down. When we close bonds, we do get bond counsel opinion that the bond is a valid bond and legally issued by the borrower. They did not render any kind of judgment on whether the loan itself was okay.
That, but does someone render that on behalf of the state?
No.
It should be some type of opinion on what the state's doing, at least.
Well, there really isn't a system for that. It would be up to this board to determine that they have made a legal loan. Once the board's acted, there really isn't any more involvement from the AG's office.
But before the loan
can
close, there must be proof that it can be repaid?
Oh, yes. The bond closing documents include an opinion that the bond itself is legal and enforceable. And the borrower is required to give us what we call a debt service coverage certificate, certifying that the revenues less their O&M expenses generate sufficient net revenues to cover our coverage requirements, which is 125% of the debt service. One of the concerns I have that picked up on your comments, Mr. Ellis, was the staff doesn't really have any expertise to make a determination whether those certifications are reasonable. On water and sewer, we have the expertise of the DEQ agencies to help us, but we really, on electric system, if Candace and I see a debt service coverage certificate that says we think our revenues will be this and our O&M expenses will be this, we have no way of judging whether that's reasonable.
One thing that I think is important for us to do here is these two projects are not simultaneous. They're not the same projects. Circumstances are extremely different in these two projects. And so I don't think that we cast the net and just say it's the same, because there are tremendous differences in the detail of these two projects. And I think that, at some point in time, there is value, and it is appropriate to be able to be in closed session under pending litigation. Those points that state statute allows us to be able to do. Another request at a future time, bringing these things, if it seems appropriate, that we're able to discuss that. And the other thing that I would like to do, and Richard, I really expect for you to come to me and do, I think there would be some value, though, if we could at some point today, even if it was like 5 minutes to allow this kind of litigation, because I think there's some things that in discussion would be valuable for them to be able to at least to deal with these problems.
So let's go to Mr. Donati, and then we'll invite and we'll check the price of my time until I hear from this person. And we'll invite the Six County Coalition to come forward. For the record, you'll state your names.
Yeah, it's a light as well. Ralph Okerlund, in my capacity as director of Six County Infrastructure Alliance today, and good to be with you. Thanks for your hard work. We realize these are difficult questions, so we're bringing you some new ideas, and we certainly understand that there are some questions that you have, and we want to make sure that we do this right. That's our greatest concern. There are a lot of different ways to do things wrong,
And we know those. We're listening to that. We want to make sure that we're doing this right. We think that it has tremendous value. And we're obviously, the Alliance is obviously an eligible applicant for these funds, and we believe that this is an eligible project that we are going to be bringing, that we are bringing to the board. There's no doubt about us meeting the statute as far as meeting the requirements for this being a project that addresses the impact of mineral development. Mineral development that we all benefit from as we get the mineral lease funds to come back into the state. If we can address the impacts that are caused by that, and we are an eligible applicant, we meet those criteria. Now, Eric is going to talk about his analysis of kind of the legal atmosphere that's out there. But being able to clean the air up out in the basin is extremely important to the basin. But it's also extremely important to the state when we look at the air attainment requirements that we have hanging over all of us. And this project addresses that impact to the basin and to the entire state. The other impact, of course, is the delivery of power, which we have seen, the growing needs that are out there in the area that this project would serve, and we need to meet those needs. So for the coalition to bring an application for this project, we think is very appropriate. And I'd like Eric to talk about the legal implications, if you would.
Sure. Thank you. Eric Johnson, counsel to the Six County Infrastructure Coalition. All of the legal requirements that have been reviewed here today were reviewed with the coalition board before application to the Community Impact Board was ever made. And everything that has been brought to the attention of my office since that application has been made was reviewed and analyzed before application to the Community Impact Board was made by the coalition. And so within that, those are concerns that we've been looking at and trying to address as we go along, because we do understand what the requirements are. And so far it appears that the Buchliss transmission line project will fit within those legal requirements. Now, not all the details are hammered out at this point, and if there is at some point it appears that there's a hurdle there that can't be cleared under the requirements for CID funding, then you know, that would have to be withdrawn. But at this point, nothing like that has happened.
And can I just add to that? We had actually Bruce and I are co-chairmen of the Six County organization. We had a conference call yesterday on this very issue, and we made that commitment that we meet all the requirements, and because we meet all the legal requirements, we don't want to do anything that is not proper, it's not going to be in the spirit and in the law. We want to be sure that we accept the steps. We want to move forward. And that's a commitment from Ralph, Eric, and the County Coalition. We're going to be thinking on that.
Maybe not so much a legal analysis, but just to plant an idea in your minds. My family, we floated down the Green River just below Fleming Gorge Dam a couple of weeks ago, and I was impressed as we put in the water there. You look up at the dam, and there's no question that the dam is a public project and a public facility. You look up there, and you can see some large electrical infrastructure that, and there's no doubt that that electrical infrastructure is also public. And so I just know that the power coming off that dam is not being sold to Mr. Smith and Mr. Jones to their direct homes, but it is being wholesaled out. But that doesn't necessarily defeat the public nature of the public project. And so those are the type of things that we're looking at to ensure that this project will conform to all the requirements for mineral lease funding.
Matt, just to add one more thing. We do understand that you have some tough choices. That right now the revenue is going to be down for a while. And as we have seen today, there have been counties who have probably absolutely no impact, who have been granted money from the CID board. This project directly deals with direct impacts to the most affected and impacted part of the state. And that should carry a lot of weight. We believe that we can answer all of the other legal questions. But board, we certainly understand the tough position that you're in. We understand that.
I guess one of my current concerns on this field is that when I hire an attorney, I want to be given the answer I want to hear. You know, if I didn't have an attorney giving me that, Susan never gives me the answer I want to hear. Tom typically doesn't either. But in the private sector, I usually can find an attorney that will tell me what I want to hear, work around whatever legal arguments there are. I guess my concern is the board, that in this process, now we have given the go-ahead, and now we're really out of giving anything other than Tom has given us notice. I guess my preference would be, and I don't know if we'd be taking action on this, but I think that as a board, we need to have a final opinion from the Attorney General's office that they are satisfied all the legal requirements are met. And if we can get that from the Attorney General's office, then I think we're in great shape. But the way things stand right now, that opinion will never come. We'll have to rely upon the borrower's legal counsel saying this is all good, it meets all legal requirements, and therefore let's move ahead unless someone wants to go to court and challenge it that way. So, while I don't think we can take an action at this point, I think at a future meeting, maybe an action item, that we want to make sure, and I would really think for me, I guess a lot of the projects we were pretty plain vanilla, and we don't need that, but we're in the area of projects now that are much more complex than funding a grant for a master's study or for a water system or a sewer system. These are much more complex deals, and the expertise needed legally and from an engineering perspective is much greater than we typically run into. And so I think we need to make sure that we're meeting the requirements of the law, and the only way I know how to do that is to make sure that we have an opinion from our counsel as a board that we're doing what is appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Further discussion, Mr. McGee?
You know, I would like to respond to that. You know, I don't mean to be terrible on this, but I am just aware that, you know, the Attorney General's office is, you know, great office, but they also have the information. And as demonstrated, you know, even in our last meeting we had here, we had an opinion from this county organization, we had an opinion from counties across the state that differs with the Attorney General. I don't want to be locked into an absolute opinion because they may or may not be right as well. So I just offer that. I think there's got to be a balance.
Actually, lawyers disagreeing has kept me and Mr. Johnson in business for a long time. But it seems like probably the good course of action based on Treasurer Ellis' suggestion is that Mr. Roberts and Mr. Johnson to try to get together and see what, if there's any way to get closer to a consensual yes, and it probably needs to be put on a next month again for the discussion. It might be helpful to know specifically what information would help the bonding process, and what information would help determine some of these constitutional and legal issues.
And I think one of our great challenges here is we don't have enough details to know what we have. We don't know what the elephant looks like. Even begin to take pieces individually. I mean, we have a general framework, but we don't have contracts in place to know exactly what it will look like. And so I think until you get that, it's difficult for legal people to give that type of opinion. So I think we're, I don't know how many months away from being there, but I think until we get some of that, it will be difficult to really know what we have.
I'd like to make a request that if we go to discuss this next month as well, and we, let's give us the option during the voting for discussion. I think we have two different projects, two different things, portions that I think would be appropriate to be discussed in closed session.
that I think needs to be discussed in closed session. That I think relate to resolution itself. That was just a reminder that we had that on the agenda for the comfortability issue that I agree, and funding meetings are only a good time to do that because those tend to be shorter meetings. Responsibility around them.
My question was that the commission requires mission coordination on the use of wards. Are we talking about the closed session as a public standing board to discuss the matter that is supposed to be public?
My understanding is that yes, we have done that in the past, and council can comment on when that's appropriate. She can just take it.
You can close the meeting to discuss pending or recently imminent litigation. So you have to be able to articulate an argument that litigation would be reasonably imminent here if we deny this project, or perhaps it would be imminent because you want to fire it, or you want to consider firing it. So that would be a reason to close the meeting. I agree with Mr. Donati, but clearly the purpose of having the open meeting law is for you to conduct your business in public, even if those discussions are sometimes uncomfortable.
And if I could just real quick, there was not an impression. I've been on boards for close to 20 years and school boards and other things, and so very clearly understand the open meeting law requirements to go into a closed session. And they know it tends to be anything to go into a closed session is not fully achieving the statute and the law.
And there's also things to discuss the purchase exchange lease of real property. It would prevent the public body from completing the transaction on the best possible terms. I don't know enough about the second deal we don't sell business. So Tom can advise you in closing meetings. I have great form of money for all the boards I represent, so certainly not impossible.
Thank you.
I just have a question on the motion that was made in the last meeting where it was suspended from. So where are you pursuing moving ahead with and all of that now?
Yes.
Yeah, how close can you give us a timeline of where you are? Because we're talking about a month away now and a possible further discussion of this matter.
It's being worked on daily. There are some complex issues involved, and so I don't currently have a time frame to the end of the tunnel, but it is being worked on every day, and so hopefully it'll come together quickly, but as we move down the road and we get around the next bend, sometimes we find there's a little more to clear than we expected.
One of my concern is we heard from Commissioner McKee that we don't want to do anything that is a project that is deemed ineligible as a project. And so if you're still coming down the road and getting closure to our bond closing. So I guess I'm trying to make sure that the bond closing doesn't happen before we really have a good feeling that it really is an eligible applicant, which Commissioner McKee
right, and those that's certainly some of the when I mentioned things need to be cleared, that's certainly some of the stuff that needs to be addressed. Is that all of those legal issues and concerns need to be nailed down and have clear answers to.
Claudia, if I may, if they started the bond process, it's still a couple of months out. And they haven't started the bond process. I have seen nothing in terms of bond documents. So this board will have time to consider these things.
Thank you. Further discussion? Any more?
Given the complexity of this stuff and get some of the novice, I'm really not a 101 student here, but I'm sure this counseling material 3 or 4 or 4. Might we not have this closed session the afternoon of the 30th? Take this into account and not be under any time pressure, and then come back to it on the following day, the 1st, and do it.
Possibly. The point being, as Claudia mentioned, we should spend the fund of the process. But to the extent there's a comfortability, then we should have more comfortable in it.
that's the spirit of him to become an unmanaged ship that's not in the company. That's mean probably any one project or something that is not project. That's the mission of the if we're further to be. I believe we're going to be there, but let's do that. That afternoon would be a good time to just do that. I'm not sure, Eric, if you're going to be able to have that finished by then. You may
I hope so, but you know, we'll see what other hurdles come up.
So the question before the board is the desire to have a closed session the afternoon before the regular scheduled board meeting, which is September 30th. Is everyone available if we do that, with the exception of Mr. Ellis, who will be out?
I'm out of town on the 30th and the 1st. I would be available to dive in, but I can't get back to more ambulance time to do that.
I don't think Rich will be here either way. So let you apparently the only one who would not be here Thursday afternoon is following along with Michelle. We're working towards that.
Just for the board meeting tonight, you have some schedule. He is not available at all on the 30th, but I am. I can talk to him next time.
Just looking at my schedule, we have that HB 23 election on the 30th. We get the call.
The 3rd is a Sunday meeting, right? So generally, we don't hear about the projects that day.
Right.
So we have some time for closed session after the funding meeting. So we can tell all the people to wait until noon.
That would
be
I think there is ample time following our funding meeting. We just have several hours, which I'd be about to plan.
We'll be rich.
So, yeah, let's do a strong vote. Of those who prefer to tune in after the regular funding meeting on the 1st at approximately 10 a.m., show of hands. We'll do that then. We'll just plan on having a closed session following the regular funding meeting to discuss the legal issues.
We can restrain ourselves and get it out
in an hour. Send up the form.
The staff takes suggestions or discussion. So anytime moving forward, if any of you have issues, would you like to put them for discussion? That's how they get on there. So how they get on it, we will put the closed session on there.
Okay, vacation for 2 weeks.
Okay, thank you. If there's no further board discussion, our next meeting will be the board briefing at 8:30 on October
1st. Don't go back to the project funding consideration.
Absolutely.
Mr. Camp really did walk through that.
In fact,
I guess one of my other concerns when I met with Mr. Olson and Mr. Johnson is does this county have other big projects they're looking at? And there are others besides this county that have projects that are big projects. And so, this funding consideration is a big issue for us going forward as to what are we going to do as a board. We have to pay attention to that because there's only so much money. And you know, I don't know details on any of these other projects. You probably all have better ideas and lots of rumors and talk is out there and how big they are. But if we got projects that are 40, 60, 80, 100 million dollar projects, I don't see that happening. And I really think that we got to start thinking in terms of if we have projects greater than $5 million, maybe our response would be that we'll fund 25% of it or we'll fund 50% of it. And you go out to the public markets and you issue bonds because a lot of these entities are able to go out to the markets and issue bonds or get the banks to buy them directly. And so there's other means of financing. But if we're going to try to balance all these things together with limited funding, we're going to have to get more creative and push more burden onto the local governments. You if we want to be all things to all people, which seems to be our mentality right now. So.
Agreed. Any further comments? Chair will accept the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. Consider our staff adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.